Well, I just pulled out of a four-hour-long conference. It's part of our interfaith series. It's one that we sponsor. This one took place at LT, which is the Budapest University. It's the largest university in Hungary, and it was with the head of the Buddhist organization here in Hungary. They have actually a theological college. I've known them for a long time, and the first thing they did was complain to me how it seems that the college is being sort of hijacked by other university professors who are teaching East Asian studies and so on there. And that was the start of our meeting. He was in anxiety. Anyway, we had a good introductory little talk. And then after the conference, television always comes. There's a religious program of the Hungarian National Television that covers the entire program as well as does interviews. And it was quite a lengthy conference, and it was well attended. It went on for 2 hours. Basically, it was about the similarities and differences of Krishna consciousness and Buddhism. And we went along the principles of Sambandha Prayojana Abhideya. Who are we? What's the end goal that we want to achieve, and how are we going to get there? And the setup is that we had a very good moderator, also someone I've known for quite a long time. Last time I saw her, she also works for a human rights organization. She came to the Kazakhstan embassy to try and communicate with the Kazakh ambassador. Anyhow, she did a little introduction. She's also a Christian priest. And then my Buddhist counterpart, he made a 5-minute presentation. Then I made a 5-minute presentation. Then we had 5 minutes to respond to each other, each 5 minutes each. And that was about who are we. And then the next format was the same for where are we, you know, what's the goal, what's the perfection, what's the truth, and then finally about how to get there. And then that takes an hour. Then there was 30 minutes questions from the audience, and this time it was good questions because we had university students, so they were actually quite smart and also respectful. And then we had a 5-minute wind-up, myself, Buddhist, and the moderator, and that was the end. I guess I should just summarize some of the points in which we got into arguing about the differences, because arguing the oneness, for instance, the benefit of ahimsa, non-violence, living in this world with a minimum number of violence, there's not much to argue about over there. But there were a few points, particularly three, that I just really stuck on and came back to. I introduced and explained that Buddhism is actually a preaching done by Lord Krishna and his former Lord Buddha 2,500 years ago with the purpose of leading very sinful, degraded followers of the Vedic system back to a path of non-violent life and a conceptual idea of learning how to become free from the ignorance that binds us to this world. So in that sense, Buddhism is part of the path back to Krishna. In their terms, nirvana, and we discussed about what this nirvana is. The real problem is when the Buddhists take it to be a complete path and a complete process, rather than just a part of the process for which Lord Buddha intended it. And therefore, they have to concoct various untenable philosophical arguments. Unfortunately, although we share a sort of common tradition and a home front, namely India, Buddhists don't accept the Vedic literatures. What to speak of the conclusions of the Vedas, Vedashisavayaraham. So we couldn't really argue on the basis of Shastra because we don't accept a common scriptural evidence. Therefore, the alternate was that at least arguments should be based on logic. So the first fallacy of logic was their emphasis on avidya rather than vidya. Buddhists emphasize that one should just become free from ignorance. They don't emphasize acquiring knowledge and learning, but they acquire freedom from ignorance, as if ignorance is like some kind of dirt that's on your hand, and if you shake it enough, it falls off. Any quick dictionary reference will show that ignorance is defined as a lack of knowledge. It's the lack of something. So you can't shake off a lack of something. Ignorance means that you have to acquire knowledge, and as soon as you acquire knowledge, then you become free from ignorance. So it's irrational and illogical to talk about just becoming freed from a lack of something. One should actually cultivate knowledge. And despite the fact that Buddhists say that knowledge isn't needed, but still they have formulated so many different books, mantras, and teachings in order to tell us and give us knowledge as to why we don't need knowledge. Not very good. The second thing is the non-existence of the soul, that ultimately we don't exist. We just think that we exist. But for me to even think that I exist means that I do exist, otherwise I can't think that I'm existing. Although I'm in this world and I'm suffering, suffering in itself has no meaning unless there's someone who's actually experiencing the suffering. To say that suffering in itself is an illusion is not an answer, because the experience of that illusion is very much a reality. And the fact that I am existing means that I am conscious. I am conscious of myself. I'm conscious of my partner, Buddhist partner, with whom I'm arguing. And I'm conscious because I exist. What is the source of that consciousness? Non-animate objects are not conscious. And I see that my consciousness existed when I was young, it exists at the present time, it will continue to exist. In other words, I always experience myself as being a conscious being. And I'm not given any type of rational reason by Buddhists as to what is the source of this consciousness, why I experience my being right now, and if my consciousness, as well as my ego or identity, are temporary, then how is it that they came to be temporarily? And from what? The concept that something comes out of nothing is the same as the scientists' suggestion that everything comes from nothing. This universe has evolved from nothing. It may be a statement, but it has nothing that has any philosophical support. It's nothing that has any type of practical experience. In other words, it's a statement that's meaningless. Therefore, again, it doesn't work, this idea that we don't exist, and in the ultimate issue, we don't exist, is a meaningless statement, and it's illogical. The third point is the entire concept of nirvana, and whereas Krishna talks about Brahma nirvana, our concept of nirvana is very much different than the Buddhist pinpoint concept of nirvana. For us, nirvana is the original form of which this earth or this material world is the counterpart, the shadow. And this Krishna begins the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Urdhva Mulam Adha Sakha. What's the top of the tree on the bank of a lake in the, becomes the lowest point of its reflection. This is also the contrast between material and spiritual world. An example that can be used is that of optics, is that when you see something through a lens, what you see is the inverse of what is actually there. So if you look through a single lens, then through a tree, then you will see it upside down. That means that at some point within the lens, which I use this word pinpoint, there's a certain point at which the material world and material existence, as you get closer and closer to transcendence, it switches from material to spiritual. And that pinpoint where it does, point is something which by definition has no size but exists. In the concept of the picture of a tree, somehow or another that picture of the tree goes from standing upright beside a lake to becoming, passing through a point in your lens and turning upside down on the eyeball. So the nirvana of the Buddhists is that pinpoint. They want to call it a void, but still, even a point actually has an existence. That's how it's defined. But what is that thing that is a void? Repeatedly, our Buddhist friend was talking about, well, when you get there, then you feel calm and peace and quiet. But there's no such thing as a void in which there's calm and peace and quiet. First of all, you can't feel, hear, or see anything in the void, because void means that there's nothing there to hear, see, or feel. Furthermore, if you don't exist, then there's no question of experiencing anything, either happiness or distress, in that void. All you can say about it is that it's the absolute negation of everything that exists. But, as we pointed out, we don't accept, first of all, this whole concept of voidism is also a meaningless thing. Just the terms that they keep using, that you find the void, you realize the void, these things all require something, and it talks about someone. It continually refers or comes back to the identity, the person, and Nirvana is being a place. And yes, Brahma Nirvana Mrityati, Nirvana is a place, because if you keep going beyond the point, then you come to the actual positive counterpart, the original form from which this material world has actually grown, which is the spiritual world. And there you see spiritual variegatedness, spiritual happiness, spiritual forms, which are all sources of happiness and bliss, of which this material reflection is a source of suffering and distress. Anyway, these were the three differences that we sort of argued, and I hope the points went across to our guests. There are some videos that we'll put on the podcast, but they're in Hungarian, so devotees won't be able to understand them unless they can follow the language. In any case, it was educational. It was the third in the series, and I don't even know who next year's partner will be, but it's a valuable education for myself. It's good for the devotees who come. It's a good source of preaching. Others who also come, it allows us to do our duty of not only seeing the oneness between different religious faiths, but also showing the difference and also analyzing whether those differences meet up to real scrutiny of logic, scriptural authority, etc. And it was all good fun. It was very pleasant, and as usual, all the members involved left in a very peaceful and ahimsa frame of mind. Hare Krishna.